Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, taking a look now at Wisconsin cheeses. Our guest today, Jeannie Carpenter, is the founder and executive director of Wisconsin Cheese Originals, an organization dedicated to sharing information about new and old artisanal cheeses. Jeannie, great to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, not long ago, we talked with Ed Janis about how Wisconsin became a dairy state. He's got a book out on that. Mm-hmm. And why. And there was a lot of cheese produced back then, mainly for transportability and easy access to protein, that sort of thing. But what's the story of artisanal cheeses in Wisconsin?
Well, I love Ed Janis's book because it's all about how the dairy cow saved Wisconsin. And that was true 160 years ago, and it's still true today. Dairy cows are still saving family farms, small cheese plants. And in the last 10 years, really the new and exciting thing happening in Wisconsin is we've had this renaissance of small farmstead artisan cheese plants being built. Since 2004, there's been 43 new dairy plants built in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
43 new, and another like 90-some have expanded. So in the last 7 years, it's been a really great period of growth of good cheese, by the way.
Goes along with the beer. You know, we've had we were just talking about beer here not too long ago on the show, the local craft beers.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's something about, maybe it's something about the air or the in Wisconsin. I don't know, but we're doing a good job of getting a small, really good quality products.
Yes.
Beer and cheese.
Yeah. Well, you know, and cheesemakers and brewmasters often they like to talk because they're in the same craft. You know, they're making small batch, highly artisanal products. Sometimes they're high priced. They have to, you know, justify the price of their products. But anytime that you make a product by hand, it's going to cost more, but it's going to taste better.
Yeah, and it really does taste great. What is it that gives Wisconsin cheese, and I'm sure there's not one answer, it's wonderful flavor?
Sure. Well, especially in southwest Wisconsin, where we live, it's called the Driftless region.
Yeah.
And there's been some studies come out in the last couple of years that the cheeses, especially raw milk cheeses, where the milk is not pasteurized before it's made into cheese, those cheeses have a distinct quality about them. They tend to be a little bit bolder, a little bit more complex, and we tend to give that reason back to the soils in the Driftless Wisconsin. It's unglaciated. Mm-hmm. Soils are a little bit sweeter. We have limestone filtered water, and I think what people forget is that cheese is made from milk. Milk comes from cows, but how that milk tastes depends on what the cows eat. And when they eat fresh grass from sweet soils, limestone filtered water, their milk tastes different. And that makes the cheese taste different. And especially in Wisconsin, we have what we're probably known as sweeter cheddars. If you go out to the East Coast, the cheddars are more bitter. In Wisconsin, we're known for sweeter cheddars. And I think that's one outlay of that.
Jeannie Carpenter, our guest as we talk Wisconsin cheeses. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You might tell us about favorite cheeses of your own as well. Email us at talk@WPR or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show to post a comment or a question. Actually, I have a Facebook comment from Linda who says, cheesemaker Carrie Henning of Keel, Wisconsin, is great. Love their horseradish cheddar. The right blend, the right stuff, a great cheese.
Yeah, Carrie Henning of Henning Cheese and Keel is a master cheesemaker. The Henning family's been making cheese for decades and decades. They're the only factory in the United States that still makes the mammoth cheddar wheels. That means that they will make a wheel of cheese that's 12,000 pounds of cheddar. They're the only factory doing that. And Carrie is very, very well known for absolutely perfecting recipes. He has a peppercorn cheddar that took him 14 years to perfect before he put it on the market. So that, talk about dedication.
Wow, that is wonderful. We also had a Facebook comment from Jeffrey who says, I've been a strict vegetarian for about 25 years, but I'm not vegan because I still eat cheese. And when I explain to people the health, the spiritual benefits of being vegetarian, I'll throw in, but I'm from Wisconsin, so I still eat good cheese regularly.
Well, you know, that reminds me of a trip I took yesterday. And since he's a vegetarian, he should be eating grass-fed cheeses because...
Yeah. You brought some with you.
Yes, I did. And I brought some cheese with me from a farm that I visited yesterday. So yesterday I had the absolute unique pleasure of going to the Burt Paris Dairy Farm, which is in Belleville, working on a video project for the Department of Ag about grass-fed dairy. And so got there about 7:30 in the morning and was able to film the cows coming out of the barn, down the lane, and going into a fresh paddock of green grass. And I grew up on a farm, but it's been a long time since I heard 80 cows eating grass all at the same time.
Chewing at the same time.
It's like literally, noisy. Yeah, it's like, it's deafening. We were trying to do an interview with Bert, you know, with a microphone, and all you could hear was cows eating. So, so I mean, that leads itself to, you know, back to the sweet soils, the limestone filtered grass. Grass-fed cheeses taste different, and we're seeing more of those in Wisconsin. I would say that's one of the, in addition to goat and sheep cheeses, the grass-fed cheeses are really growing in popularity, and it's because they taste different. They have a more mm-hmm. complex flavor.
They do.
They have an earthiness about them, and
really good.
They command a higher price, which is good for the dairy farmer and the cheesemaker.
And you brought with you today I'm trying to figure out or determine what this this cheese is.
Yeah, so
it's a farm style cheddar. It's called.
Yeah, so I brought two cheeses. One is we're chomping here on the Gouda from the Edelweiss Graziers, which is made from the milk at Burt Paris's farm where I was yesterday, getting drowned up by cows. And the other one is from Saxon Homestead Creamery. That's one farm, one herd. They have about 450 cows, but all their cheeses are made from the milk of their one herd, which is a grazed herd, which means they have access to pasture 24/7. You know, in Wisconsin, we have this little thing called winter, and mm-hmm. we realize that. But for about 8 months out of the year, cows in Wisconsin can eat fresh grass. And so the Saxon family, it's the Klesig and Heimro families in Cleveland, Wisconsin, they developed four or five what we call signature cheeses. And this has been really the growing category in Wisconsin in the last 7 years. Our cheesemakers are no longer kind of depending on the old world cousins like mm-hmm. cheddar and Parmesan. They are coming up with completely original cheeses. And this cheese here called Pastures is a signature cheese. It's a cloth-bound cheese. I mean, if you had to describe it, it might be a cross between a cheddar and a Parmesan.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. You don't have to use those old world labels. You can talk about how it's sweet and it's nutty and it's got that pineapple-y characteristic.
I wish everybody could have a bite right now. It's really good. I'll tell you that. Oh, that is wonderful. Kelly in Green Bay has a question for you. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. I'm in Green Bay, but I'm actually from Ohio, and every time I go home to visit, I have to bring tons and tons of cheese curds because my family loves them. And I'm just curious why other states haven't hopped on to how amazing cheese curds are and why Wisconsin's the only place I've ever really seen them on the shelves.
I am convinced that cheese curds are a cultural phenomenon. In Wisconsin, I think just because we have been making cheese and eating cheese and living cheese for 160 years, we think cheese in any way, shape, or form is awesome.
right.
And we love cheese curds. And the reason that we love cheese curds is because in Wisconsin, we can get them fresh, less than a day old,
right.
Often warm out of the vat. You get outside of Wisconsin, and even folks shipping cheese curds, by the time that you get them in a store, they're at least 2 days old, usually five. They're no longer squeaky. They're no longer warm. They're these little hard kernels of cheddar cheese. And then we wonder why no one else gets excited about cheese curds. There's Beecher's Handmade Cheese in Seattle, Washington. It's a downtown urban cheese factory. They make fresh cheese curds. They sell them for $14 a pound.
Wow.
And people, they cannot keep them on the shelf. So I'm right there with you. I don't know why other cheesemakers in other places aren't making them because, to really enjoy the cheese curd, it's got to be warm. It should be fresh, less than a day old. And, you can't do that unless you're living in a place that's making them.
Well, there you
All
go.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Jeff in Brookfield next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. See, I was wondering how Wisconsin fares on a worldwide cheese competition, if you will. I know they're, you know, we're obviously known in the country, but how do people in France or Italy, would they know Wisconsin cheese at all?
Increasingly, that answer is yes. 10 years ago, you know, if you use the words American cheese in France, you know, they'd I don't even know if they'd politely usher you out the door. But increasingly, more Wisconsin cheesemakers are entering their cheeses in world contests, and the name, the quality of the cheese always stands on its own. If we can get Wisconsin cheese in a judge's mouth, it most likely will win. It's just kind of getting past that stereotype of all Wisconsin cheese is orange and all American cheese is, you know, processed from a can. We're still finding that stereotype on a world level, but still Wisconsin cheeses by and far still clean up at U.S. contests, and they're really making an edge at world contests.
Perfect. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. More callers online. Yeah, and I would think, I mean, some of our top people here, men and women, would do really well in worldwide competitions.
Oh, I mean, and they do. I mean, it's just a matter of, it seems like the really awesome cheese that's being made in Wisconsin is being made by the smaller farmstead artisan cheesemakers. A lot of these folks are the same people. They're milking the animals and making the cheese. And entering contests is sort of like 36th on their list.
Yeah.
You know, number one is taking care of the animals. Number two is milking. Number three is making cheese. And we have this Midwestern Wisconsin thing where we don't like to brag, and it's not polite to say how good your cheese is. And frankly, we need to get over that because, I mean, we're making such good product. It's amazing.
Michelle in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Yeah, you talked a little bit about the how the soils have an impact on the taste of the cheese, but from what I understand, different breeds of cows make different kinds of milk, and are the people making these artisanal cheeses, are they using different cows other than the big old Holstein that we see on our landscape?
They are, and I'm so glad that you brought that up because that's kind of like the next wave. These two cheeses that we have that Larry and I are eating, and none of you else will get, but anyway, the two cheeses that we're eating, both of those herds are completely mixed herds. So they're crossed between Holsteins, Jerseys, there's some Normandy Red in there, there's some Ayrshire. Because what's happened in the United States is the Holstein cow, we've bred the Holstein cow to give a lot of milk. We have not bred the Holstein cow to eat grass. You put a Holstein cow out on grass and they sort of don't know what to do. So any sort of like grazier cheesemaker that you meet, like Pleasant Ridge Reserve is a great example of Upland Cheese in Dodgeville. Mike Gingrich and Andy Hatch, their herd of cows is a mix of 9 different breeds, and Holstein is very, very little. It's, you know, it's way back in the genetic build, because we're finding that these old style breeds, they know how to eat grass and process it efficiently and turn it into really great tasting milk.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Do they make more butter fat in their milk too?
Yeah, like, you know, brown Swiss cows and Jerseys are known for producing more butter fat, and, you know, specific cheeses deal well with better butter fat, more butter fat than others. Like, you know, you can't make a low fat part skim mozzarella out of brown Swiss milk, but you can make a great original cheese that's, you know, really buttery, high fat content. I'm thinking of actually Al Beckham of Nordic Creamery, they're actually building an on-farm specialty butter plant. It's going to have their grand opening in August, and he's in the process of putting together a 25-cow herd of totally Normandy Reds. It's a breed that's really not known in the United States. So he's importing semen and embryos from Norway. And because he has looked at the profile of that milk, and he thinks that he can make a really good cheese out of it. So isn't that interesting that it's kind of coming full circle, that our dairy farmers are thinking about the cheese that they want to make, and then they're breeding their cows to make that cheese. I mean,
very cool.
Yeah, a decade ago, that was not even on the radar.
Cool.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We had a caller that who is lactose intolerant would like to know what options are possible for someone in his situation. And well, you have that. Same.
Yeah. I carry Lactaid with me in my purse. I'm always mocked heavily. My license plate says cheese geek. And then, you know, I pull out the Lactaid. The cool thing about cheese is that the longer it ages, the less lactose it contains. And everybody's lactose intolerance, scheme is different. I'm definitely on a less serious end. And so I have no problem with a cheese that's aged 60 days or more. Anytime you age a cheese for a couple of months, most, if not all, the lactose is going to be out of it. So I don't even take Lactaid when I eat cheese, unless it's like a fresh, like, you know, mascarpone or something like that. Then I do. But that's the cool thing about cheese. If you're lactose intolerant, cheese is a good option.
Janie Carpenter, founder and executive director of Wisconsin Cheese Original, an organization dedicated to sharing information about new artisan cheeses. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking cheese today with Janie Carpenter. Janie, you brought in a postcard. It's a oversized postcard with a picture that's just absolutely fantastic. Have fun, do good, eat cheese, it says, with Katie Hedrick, the 2011 U.S. champion cheesemaker.
Yeah, so the postcard that Larry's referring to here, I sent out about 600 of those on Saturday. That's promoting the two-day festival that I do in Madison in November, this year, November 4th and 5th. The website is wicheesefest.com. If you ever want to learn more, you can sign up for the email list there. But on the picture of the postcard that I sent out this year, it's an outtake. I hired a photographer last year to put together a cheesemaker calendar, which, are hanging on walls all over the United States this year. But the outtake is a picture, actually, of Katie Hedrick, with a baby white goat, and it's gnawing on her chin, and she's laughing. And that was in between pictures of her holding the baby goat and looking cute. The story of Katie Hedrick is just a perfect example of what's happening in Wisconsin. Every year, Wisconsin Cheese Originals, the organization that I founded, we give out a $2,500 scholarship to a beginning cheesemaker. And Katie was the 2010 recipient. A year later, she was the 2011 U.S. champion cheesemaker.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she's 25. She's making goat's milk cheeses. Up till now, they've been making their cheeses at Saxon, where I talked about before. It's down the road from them. But now with the popularity of their Evalon, which is the cheese that won, she and her parents have partnered together along with some siblings, and they're building an on-farm creamery. It's another example of, you know, a couple who, you know, have been milking goats forever. The kids didn't want to milk goats, yeah, 365 days a year, but they're bringing back two of their children into the business to do marketing and cheese making. So it's a family farm that's going to continue to the next generation.
That's absolutely wonderful. And she's actually, that farm is part of this event that you have in
November. Yeah. So the festival, this is
four
the,
things, four main things.
Yeah. The festival this year, this is the third year, and every year it gets more popular. And so I'm always a proponent of quality over quantity. So I don't like to make events bigger, but I try to add more components so that more people can come. So this year I've added three farm and creamery tours where a small group of people can spend an entire day visiting these small cheesemakers. And Katie and her family are on one of those tours. And so it's a chance where, you know, if you've never been to a goat dairy, you're going to get up close and personal with dairy goats. You're going to see a dairy cheese operation under construction. We're going to have lunch on their farm. So it's a way that I try to create experiences, because so few people, you know, you ask them where food comes from and they say from the store.
Yeah.
And so it's an awesome way to try to get people reconnected with the people who are making their food.
And so actually, if you go on your website, I assume Wisconsin Cheese Originals, you can find out more about
them. Yep. There's a link.
And we've posted a link to your site on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. So if you're already on the Facebook page, just click on that and you can go right to Jeannie's site. And it's a pretty site. Very nice. Marion Pewaukee will turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Yes, thanks for the show, because anything positive about Wisconsin is always appreciated. And I wanted to just mention, not to give them any kind of special kudos, but Brennan's has many award-winning cheeses from Wisconsin. And then I saw a Rachel Ray show last Thursday, and they had a domestic burrata, which is a third of the cost of the cheese that is an international mozzarella oozing cheese. So I just thought I'd mention that. And then we have tried a really wonderful Parmesan that was made from the Antigo Cheese Company called Stravecchio. So there's a lot of really good ones out there, and I think, you know, people do want to get away from, or should get away from, their processed American cheeses and, you know, the orange cheddar and the plain ones that people typically eat so often.
Comment, Janie?
Yeah, you know, with the rise of more original signature cheeses, it's interesting. We've also seen the rise of more specialty food and cheese shops. And Brennan's has done an absolutely amazing job. I was actually just in a Brennan's on University Avenue, in Madison last night. And their cheese section, I don't know how many hundreds of cheeses they have.
A nice job of displaying it.
Yeah,
too.
They do a great job. And the cool thing about Brennan's is that they actually they buy most of the cheeses from the U.S. and the World Contest, and also the Wisconsin State Fair Contest, and they cut them up and then they offer them for sale. So it's a great way for people to be able to eat those cheeses if they can't go to a particular contest. So yeah, we've lots and lots of specialty food shops opening all over.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mary, for calling. Rita in Appleton, we turn to you next. Hi, Rita.
Hello. I have a question about lactose intolerant people. When you refer to sharp medium, like a cheddar, does that relate to the age of the cheese that you buy? And also, is cheese less problematic to people when it is cooked, to lactose intolerant people?
Oh, I don't know about the cooking question. I think it probably depends on the age of the cheese, how old the cheese is, no matter whether you're eating it, you know, out of the package or cooking it. It depends on how old the cheese is. But back to your question about the mild, medium, and sharp, those are marketing terms that were invented, you know, 50 years ago, probably by Kraft. And they don't, I don't like those terms because I don't know what they mean. I don't know, is a mild cheese, is that like a week old? Is it 2 months old? I don't know. That's why you'll see more and more cheesemakers actually putting the age of the cheese on their package. Like this Pasteur's, it'll say it's age 9 months. Okay, that's cool. I know how old that is. It's not medium, mild, or sharp. I think most of the cheddars that you see in the store, if they say sharp, they might only be 6 months old. And, you know, in Wisconsin, we're making aged cheddars up to 15 years. I think those sort of marketing terms kind of do a disservice to our cheesemakers, and that's why you'll see more and more cheesemakers on their labels saying exactly how old the cheese has been aged.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much for calling, Rita. Rick in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, my question was, I noticed, if you will, that some of the yellow cheeses tend to constipate, where white cheeses like the Munsters or Swiss do not, and I was wondering if that's an ingredient of the cheese, or is it something in the manufacturing process that causes that? I know it's a goofy question.
Yeah, that I don't think I'm an expert in that, but what I can tell you is that the color of the cheese, the reason a gold or orange cheese is that color is because a little seed called annatto is added to it, and that's what makes that gold or orange color. All cheese naturally is white. There are no orange cows producing orange milk. Mm-hmm. That color is added from the annatto seed. So that's the difference in the colors. And you'll see more and more in Wisconsin. We're still the home of orange cheddar, but you're seeing actually less cheesemakers adding that orange coloring because more sophisticated consumers, especially on the coast, are thinking that it's like kind of like that commodity orange cheddar is from Wisconsin. It's just, you know, anybody can get that, whereas the natural artisan cheddar is white. And what they don't know, it's the same exact cheese. It's just been colored with the annatto seed, so it's totally a perception thing.
There you go.
I have other quick one. Are there any cheeses, let's say, in the United States that they can't, like, I'm thinking, like, you can't call brandy in America cognac because it comes from France. Are there any cheeses that are in the United States that, because of, you know, copyrights or whatever they would call it, that are just as good a quality or are named something else comparable, let's say, to something made in France or wherever?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's why in the United States you see so many cheeses with whimsical names. You know, a great example, again, I talked about Pleasant Ridge Reserve, you know, triple best of show champion at the American Cheese Society, a U.S. champion. That cheese is based on the French cheese called Beaufort, B-E-A-U-F-O-R-T. They can't call it that because that's a destination cheese in France. That's why you see so many cheeses with you know, names like Pastures, Pleasant Ridge Reserve, Caprico. It's because in the United States, we're not supposed to call them by those old world names. They're protected. And you still see cheesemakers do it. You see cheesemakers calling their cheese Parmesan. They really shouldn't. That's why the caller before talked about Sarvecchio, which is an amazing Parmesan cheese made in Antico. They call it Sarvecchio because you're not supposed to label it Parmesan.
Yeah. See, I was thinking like blue cheese. I was heard you can't in America call American cheese blue cheese.
I would say you probably can't call it Roquefort because that's a French destination name. But blue is a category. So, yeah, you can call it blue.
Yep. For sure.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. We had an email from Roxanne in Green Bay. I just heard a comment about cheese curds. I had to follow up. I'm originally from Oregon, home of Tillamook cheese. We always get that cheese, Tillamook cheese curds when we go home to the Oregon coast, and the fresher the curds, the squeakier they are. They're just happy cows.
that's good. That's awesome.
So that's really cool. And our producer Judith loved the Crave Brothers fresh mozzarella with heirloom tomatoes and basil from the garden. Plus a splash of balsamic vinegar. Heaven on a plate.
Yeah, it's definitely.
He's right.
Yeah.
It is.
It's definitely fresh mozzarella season. Tomatoes are coming in and everyone's buying fresh mozz.
And Facebook comment from Jocelyn. Great show. The Environmental Working Group recently released an analysis of greenhouse gas emissions from common protein sources. And I was dismayed to see that cheese was ranked as third under lamb and beef. I was hoping Jeannie could discuss what Wisconsin cheesemakers may be doing to reduce the carbon emissions of their process.
That's an awesome question. There's I actually just went to a seminar last week at the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, and I blogged about it. If you go to Cheese Underground, the blog that's up right now is called Green Cheese, and it's a 3-year study basically helping cheesemakers lower the carbon footprints of making cheese. I think I have some stats up there. I think basically, like, the carbon footprint of 1 gallon of milk is 17.6 units of carbon, which is actually a really high number. So the point of that study, I think it's a partnership between the university, some progressive dairy farmers, the Department of Ag, is they're really trying to figure out how to lower the carbon footprint of cheese. So that's why you're seeing more biodigesters on farms. You're seeing cheesemakers trying to figure out ways to use less water in the cheesemaking process. All of these folks are very much aware of the toll that making cheese and making any sort of food takes on the environment. So that's always something they're working on.
And let's see here. I think we've got a photo up here. Let me see if I can pull that up. New photo. Oh, yeah. Photo from Catherine. It's got a photo of some cheese. She says, I love this Wisconsin cheese. It's Pleasant Ridge Reserve from Uplands Cheese Company.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the cheese that's based on the French style of the Beaufort. And I'm convinced that one of the reasons that cheese is so popular and has won so many awards, it's a grass-fed cheese. That cheese is only made in the months when cows are eating fresh green grass. So Pleasant Ridge Reserve is made from, you know, maybe the end of April, beginning of May until about the middle of July, because in Wisconsin, you know, our rains tend to end about this time of year, pastures dry up. So they stop making the cheese and then they start making it again in September when we tend to get more rain again. Into October. So the Pleasant Ridge Reserve, it's only made when cows are eating fresh grass. And that's, I'm convinced, that's why it wins so many awards, why people like it so much. It's got that complex, that earthy flavor. It's just, it's like one of those cheeses that that nobody dislikes. It's a people pleaser.
And thanks for posting the photo and your comment, Kathleen. Don in Warren, Illinois, up with a question or comment. Hi, Don.
Hi. 50, 60 years ago, I found a cheese when we were still raising cows and when we had a craft plant at Galena, Illinois, and they had a cheese called Chantel. And about the time I find out I like it, they're gone. But it was told me that you could only make that flavor by having high limestone grass.
Yeah. That, I mean, if in southwest Wisconsin, you know, there used to be a cheddar cheese factory about every 4 miles on Crossroads. And that was because that was about the distance, you know, a cart with horses could carry milk cans to the cheese factory. And you talk to old-time cheesemakers, and they will tell you every one of those cheese factories, their cheddar tasted different. And that's because the cheesemaker was using different cultures. The milk was, you know, unique to the farms around it. And you talk to old-time cheesemakers, and they can still tell you, oh, so-and-so made this kind of cheddar, and it tasted like this. Mm-hmm. And so-and-so made this cheddar, and it tasted like this. And the average person eats it, and, you know, it's like, well, it's cheddar. Neat.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's folks in there, I mean, especially with the sophisticated palates, that can pick up those flavors. And it's really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Don, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions. We have open lines get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Join in. We had an email from Gail who says, my dad was visiting friends in Colorado where he found, quote, aged cheddar, which said, said aged at least 60 days on the label. After that, he took cheeses to his friends whenever he visited from Wisconsin.
Right, yeah. I'm wondering if maybe the age at least 60 days, maybe it was a raw milk cheddar. And, you know, in the United States, you can make raw milk cheeses. That just means that the milk is not pasteurized before it's made into cheese, but the cheese has to be aged at least 60 days. So maybe it was a raw milk cheddar, but, you know, more likely it might just have been someone who didn't know what real aged cheddar was. You know, in Wisconsin, if you put aged cheddar on a piece of cheese that was 2 months old, they'd laugh at you.
And speaking of raw milk, a caller from Green Bay, I don't think we went over this, wanted to know if raw milk cheese is safe to eat, and if it is, how?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And so again, in the United States, it's an FDA rule. You're not allowed to consume cheese if it's made from unpasteurized milk, if it's aged less than 60 days. And the reasoning there goes that all of the harmful pathogens will have dissipated from that cheese during that 2 month period. Of course, that is completely up for debate. You can never find two scientists that agree on that anywhere. But that's the rule. So cheesemakers follow that rule. So if you enjoy a good raw milk cheese, which I do, you just have to wait 2 months. And quite frankly, raw milk cheeses tend to taste better the longer they age anyway.
Yeah.
So it works.
Adam in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Adam.
Hi. I got a question. I'm going on a 9-day canoe trip where it's going to be pretty remote, and we want to bring some cheeses, and we won't have any way to keep it cool over that period. Do you recommend like any cheeses that hold up to basically being out of the sun, but, you know, not being cooled for that amount of time?
I don't know about 9 days, but you can definitely get some cheeses for at least the first three or four. You're going to want to look for hard cheeses, like Parmesan, anything that's been aged, you know, a couple years. Something that can really, like, if you can put it on your counter for a day and it doesn't like sweat or, you know, really take any sort of bad effects from that. Yeah, the harder the cheese, the longer it will last. But I don't think you're going to find a cheese that lasts 9 days. Sorry.
I got a kind of a follow up question. Like when you say aged cheeses, like does that like go for like an aged cheddar? Will that hold up for a couple of days without being like necessarily chilled?
Yeah, I mean, I routinely leave cheese on my counter. I mean, I don't know how it's going to do in the sun and in the humidity and the heat. But yeah, anytime you can get the more aged the cheese, the better it's going to withstand the weather.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Reed in Clintonville, your turn. Hi, Reed.
Thank you very much. Say, I just wanted a couple of things quickly. One, we've discovered a new cheese out of Appleton. They were at the farmer's market recently, and it's Red Barn cheese, and they had a 2-year-old cheddar. They're hoping, of course, they've only been in business 2 years, and it was a delightful cheese. We really, really enjoyed it, Red Barn cheese. I would also like to recommend, but it's from Washington State, Willapa Blue, W-I-L-L-I-P-A, Willapa Blue.
The last
thing I want to ask is, can you tell me where I can get a really, really super strong brick cheese? I get cheese fairly strong from DuPont cheese in Marion, but that's it. I'll hang up and listen.
Sure. So the really strong brick cheese, two cheese makers come to mind. Widmer's Cheese Cellar in Teresa, Wisconsin, is still making the old-style brick cheese where Joe's still pressing the whey out of the milk with actual bricks, and he makes an aged brick that's wrapped in foil. So that's in Teresa. The other one is Chalet Cooperative in Monroe. They make what they call a German-style brick. And that is like on the stinkiness level of a Limburger. it's not for the faint of heart. If you go into a grocery store or a cheese shop, ask them, you know, what's basically the stinkiest cheese that you have, and most likely they'll have something that will meet your taste.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Nell, on to you now in Milwaukee. Hi, Nell.
Hi. Well, as a vegetarian and one who ate cheeses until the scales were removed from my eyes, I realized that I can't actually be a vegetarian and eat cheese unless I can find a vegetable rennet cheese. And that's almost impossible, and it's impossible to get anyone to explain how one goes about finding a vegetable rennet cheese.
Culture Magazine, which is it's a quarterly glossy magazine, it's completely about cheese. I want to say like 2 or 3 issues ago, their cover story was on thistle rennet cheeses. So if you go to their website, Culture Magazine, I'm sure they would still have that on the website. There's more and more cheesemakers are making vegetable rennet cheeses because more and more people like you, you know, are demanding those. And so the information is out there. I would definitely go to Culture Magazine because the whole cover story was on it. And I just thought it was really interesting.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Jeannie, thank you so much. I wanted to remind people that can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and find your website, which is great. And we've got this event. And when can people start signing up for this event?
Yeah, so tickets to the 3rd Annual Wisconsin Original Cheese Festival go on sale in September, which, believe it or not, is coming up. I can't believe how fast the summer's going.
I know it. Well, we'll have you back, and we'll do this again.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jeannie Carpenter, founder and executive director of Wisconsin Cheese Original. It's an organization designed and dedicated to share information about artisan cheeses. And she does a great job. She knows a lot, doesn't she? Man, I'm always surprised at how much she knows and how many people she knows. She knows everybody in the cheese business, I think, here in Wisconsin at least. And it was a great pleasure to have her here, and a great pleasure to have her bring some cheeses for us, too. They are really delicious. Well, somebody mentioned canoeing, and what kind of cheese could I take on a canoe? We're going to talk paddling in Hawaii and closer to home right here in Wisconsin as we visit with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison, next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.